Fledglings, written by Shield Maiden and read by Flower Parish. This is a Marvel and DC crossover fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Bucky Barnes / Clint Barton / Jason Todd. Rehumanizing living weapons is a skill Clint never expected to be known for, but here they are. "You did good with Romanoff," Hill had said when she asked him to help the Winter Soldier, become a person again. And she probably didn't mean for them to become an item, but obviously she at least didn't mind too much, because from then on, it kind of becomes a thing. Anytime S.H.I.E.L.D. encounters a new person that fits the bill, which happens surprisingly often, they just chuck them at him. And Clint, he's acting like he's doing them the world's biggest favor and milking that for all the favors it will gain him in turn, but to be honest, he's thriving. He always, from back when he was little, wanted a family, one that deserved the name. And if he ends up building that from those S.H.I.E.L.D. entrusts into his care, hey, that works for him. In the case of Pietro and Wanda, it would have happened anyway. They were just kids. How could he not take them under his wing? Wing, ha, like a bird, get it? Gamora and Nebula are not officially his charges, and they only see each other every once in a while, but they have somehow adopted him as a cool uncle without him even trying. He loves to have friendly competitions with them at the range or even flying some Quinjets, and their relaxed banter on comms is music to his ears. Steve would never in his life have accepted the fact that he was created to be a living weapon nearly as much as Bucky was, but that turned out not to matter too much. He still trusted Clint, and came to him for advice in the dead of night, when everyone else was asleep. Asked him about a new strategy choice first, sure, or how the newest trick arrows were coming along, but then he would ask an offhand question about ice cream flavors or text speak or Star Trek canon as well, seemingly on his way out already, and that would open up a conversation about the topic he was actually there for. Clint suspects that he didn't even admit to himself what he was doing, but that was not important. Clint had his back. Yelena is somewhat of a tougher case again, blaming him for her sister's death and all that. But in the end, even that worked out, and now she is just as much of a little sister to him as Kate. So, overall, Clint thinks he's got his unexpected area of expertise pretty much covered. Until, one day, there is no knock on the door, no phone call from S.H.I.E.L.D., or anyone for that matter. Instead, late one night, there is an almost inaudible snick as the security of Clint's window is disabled, and then the very audible creak of old, unoiled hinges. A shadowy figure freezes on the ledge just as Bucky sits up lightning quick and has his gun out from under the pillow and pointed at the intruder before Clint even has his eyes fully open. Having a super soldier boyfriend sure is handy sometimes, especially when you're hard of hearing. He hastily grabs his aids from the nightstand and shoves them into his ears, while also palming the throwing knife. Bucky is already lowering his gun, though, so there's probably no real danger. "Heart attack? Seriously, do you have something against doors?" Clint blinks again and, oh, right, that is Jason there on the ledge. Should have known. Who else would know how to deactivate their security? But also, Bucky has a point. What is it with Jason and not using doors? Jason doesn't answer, though, just climbs down from the ledge in a motion that is surprisingly fluid for a man as bulky as he is. He opens his belt while walking over to their bed, climbs out of his jeans, and pulls the hoodie over his head. Clint turns his head and lifts it slightly off the pillow so he can keep watching across Bucky, who has laid back down. Jason's body is familiar by now, but it still looks like that, especially bathed in the moonlight that illuminates their apartment, and Clint is not wasting any chance to look at him. Jason stops stripping with his tee and boxers still on, though, shooting Clint a playful wink before he climbs under the covers on Bucky's side and plants a peck on his cheek. He does stretch over to kiss the pout from Clint's lips as well, though, so Clint forgives him. He is half asleep again already when he remembers that Jason was only supposed to come over next Thursday and at daytime. What the fuck? But Jason doesn't seem to be in any immediate distress, so Clint decides any further questions can probably wait till morning. Morning comes around, and Clint wakes up to the heavenly smell of coffee, pancakes, and bacon. He opens his eyes and sits up, looks over towards the open-plan kitchen, and sees Bucky and Jason standing at the stove. From the looks of them, they are bickering over who is in control of the pans. Clint sometimes can't believe this is actually his life. The sheer domesticity of those two fearsome assassins cooking him breakfast and sporting bedhead feels like it is some kind of hallucination. But no, Clint has had his fair share of hallucinations in his life, and these two dorks are decidedly real. He climbs out of bed and joins them in the kitchen, placing lazy good morning kisses on their heads before pouring half the carafe of coffee into his favorite big mug. Once they're seated at the kitchen table, breakfast on their plates and the next pot of coffee percolating in the background, Clint hooks his foot around Jason's ankle. "Not that I don't love to see you, Jay, but what's up?" "Subtle," Bucky murmurs. Clint ignores him. He can be subtle, but he doesn't get why he should be right now. They all know that Jason's visit is a surprise. He also has only had half a mug of coffee yet, so it would be too much effort anyway. "I'm here to see my boyfriends," Jason tries, and then sighs when Clint gives him an unimpressed look. Okay, I could use your help with some kind of, situation. After breakfast, though, I didn't fry those up to perfection for them to get cold." "Perfection, huh?" Bucky quips, ever prepared to be a little shit. "And what would you know about that? If I hadn't stopped you from adding buttermilk to the batter, we wouldn't... It gets fluffier that way." Jason cuts off a piece of his syrup-drenched pancake, waving it about. "Look how dense these are." "Maybe, but at least they don't taste like they've gone bad." "Just because you never..." Clint makes a show of taking out his aids and placing them beside his plate. He loves his boyfriends with all his heart, but he absolutely is not caffeinated enough for this. When he has eaten his pancakes and is one quarter into his second mug, Bucky nudges his knee against Clint's and gestures for him to put his aids back in. Nods his head in Jason's direction, who has already cleared his plate and is stirring the tea in his mug, spoon clattering. "Huh, Jason's nervous." Clint's stomach twists in a way that has him regretting that last pancake. "So, you obviously remember our time in Toronto." Clint does, in fact, remember Toronto. It's where they met Jason, or Red Hood at least. There wasn't really a Jason to meet, not at first. There was a shell of a human being who had torn his way through organized crime in several cities. Competent and deadly, focused only on destruction. Destruction of crime, sure, but S.H.I.E.L.D. still had gotten concerned. They sent Clint and Bucky, because Bucky would know another Winter Soldier when he saw one, and be able to go toe-to-toe with one, and Clint had gained some kind of reputation as an assassin whisperer. It took both of them and some truly mad luck to catch up to their target and intercept him, and Clint got a few new scars for his trouble. But he also got to earn Red Hood's trust, and Bucky and him coaxed Jason out of his stupor, little by little. It was slow work, and a lot of it wasn't pretty, but between the berserk rage and the blankness, the grief and the nightmares, Jason had rebuilt his personality, had listened to Bucky's accounts of how he had done it, and had learned to trust Clint's easy acceptance of all his sharp edges, bit by tiny bit. Bucky and Clint had, by unspoken agreement, tried to ward off his advances, at first. They were the first people to fully treat him as a fellow person in literal years. Of course he would imprint on them. It wasn't right to take advantage of that, and so they let him down gently and, when they deemed it safe, sent him on his way. But Jason had put in the work. He had made an effort to connect to other people, had started therapy, and, at long last, even gone to reconcile with his family. And then he had shown up and literally dared them to turn him down again. They hadn't. Jason must read all of that in Clint's face, and probably Bucky's too, because he doesn't wait for an actual answer, just nods with an unhappy twitch to his mouth. "Bruce has added a new child to his roster. A girl. Trained by the same people who had me, but basically from birth. And she... God." Jason lets go of the spoon with a clatter and balls his napkin in his fist, starts tearing off little pieces with the other hand and rolling them into tiny balls as he continues. "She doesn't even talk, because no one ever needed her to. They just pointed her at someone to kill. And I... Fuck. I want to help, but I get so angry just thinking about what they did to her. She was a baby, for fuck's sake. How old is she? Asks Bucky, ever the practical one, but also radiating tension. Plint can't blame him. People who turn children into soldiers are the absolute worst, and the fact that that includes Bruce, with all his good intentions and terrible practice, is not making this any less of a mess. 16, we think. Bucky seems to relax a smidgen at that. So not that far from your age when we first met. Jason makes a face. Well, maybe, but she's still a child. So were you, Clint wants to say, but carefully doesn't. He remembers Jason when they saw him without the mask for the first time. Remembers being gut-punched by how fucking young that infamous assassin was, and the implications of that. She's unbrainwashed enough to, you know, be a person, I suspect, if Bruce is keeping her around, Bucky asks, and Jason looks conflicted. Clint really, really doesn't like where this is going. Yeah, mostly. I mean, she doesn't really know how to be a person, I think. That's why I'm asking for your help. But she's not like me, if that's what you mean. The self-deprecation is so strong in Jason's voice that Clint can barely restrain himself, as if Jason had in any way been responsible for the state he'd been in when they'd met. But he knows that Jason is still fighting those demons in therapy, and it would only distract from the topic at hand to bring them here. She's not mindless, and she's not violent, not on her own, not unless you attack her or she needs to fight to protect others. She's one hell of a fighter then. Almost gave me a run for my money when we first crossed paths and she mistook me for the enemy. Jason is running out of napkin to shred, and Clint pushes his own toward him. Jason takes it without even seeming to notice. But she's such a fighter when it comes to her life, too. Ran away from them first chance she got, even though they had her for so long. That's good, right? He glances up, hope bright on his face for a moment before he schools his features again. Just what she did between that and Bruce finding her is a bit of a mystery. As I said, she doesn't really talk. Bucky hums thoughtfully and doesn't say anything for a moment. It's not hard to guess that he's caught on to the same similarities that Clint has. A runaway from a brainwashing murder cult, mute and only half a person after years of captivity. Naturally leaning away from violence, although skilled and trained for it. Protective, not so far from how Bucky had been when Steve brought him in with reluctant permission from S.H.I.E.L.D. Clint looks over at him and finds Bucky watching him. Jaw tight, but eyes determined, present. He gives Clint a tiny nod, and Clint returns a quick, relieved smile. On his other side is Jason, who has shredded the second napkin and is pushing the pieces around the table aimlessly. Clint grabs one of his restless hands in his own, squeezes it. Hey. Jason looks up at him, eyes wide and face full of warring emotions. You know we'll help, right? Jason's eyes light up, allowing the hope to win over again. We will, Clint repeats, to make it stick. He hates how Jason is still wary of ever relying on anyone but himself after all the recovery work he's put in already. He leans across to Jason, places a kiss on his forehead. Proud of you for coming here and asking for our help. Jason rolls his eyes and grumbles wordlessly, but he doesn't deflect or argue, and Clint is proud of him for that, too. He leans back in his chair, releasing Jay's hand. Do you think she'd be okay to come here for a while? He asks. And if Bruce would let her? She'll come if I tell her about you in Toronto, what you did for me. As for Bruce, a predatory smile blooms on Jason's face. He's welcome to try and stop her. Clint nods and chooses not to think about how unsettling that sounds. If they can get the girl here and work with her, he'll take it. He'll call up Wanda and Yelena later, fill them in. Might be good to have someone around who can be a big sister. Well then, sounds like we've got a deal. Clint grins. Wanna shake hands about it, or should we seal it with blowjobs? Jason sputters the laugh Clint had been hoping for, while Bucky groans and covers his face with his hands. God, you're a menace. The end.